Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 376, titled A View from the Bridge. This is being recorded on September 1st of 2002. By the time listeners hear this program, there will be a detailed, annotated, article-length description of the broadcast in the Real Audio-equipped For the Record section of the Spitfire website. In addition to the Real Audio function of the Spitfire website, again, which will have an article-length description, rigorously detailed and annotated and containing long excerpts of text, people should be aware that sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. One word, and older programs are available at a longer URL that is linked to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. Now, to the subject material of this broadcast, For the Record 376, one could subtitle this program, The Texas Rangers Meet Al-Qaeda and Adolf Hitler, because the view from the bridge, so to speak, or one could perhaps conceive of the events in and around September 11th as the Al-Qaeda villa, sort of a hilltop villa from which one can look out, and even though one gets different perspectives from this particular villa, it's all on top of a hill and it's all part of the same structure. And I guess one could say that in order to examine some of the parameters of the events in and around September 11th, which are it's a profound event and much farther, with much greater implications than a lot of people realize, one could take a look at two individuals, one a fellow named Talat Atman, and the other the late François Janoux. François Janoux committed suicide in 1996, but as we're going to see, his name has cropped up in a number of different contexts in connection with the events of September 11th. And if one is taking a look out from this villa, one could perhaps stay in the Talat Atman suite, and one would look out and one would see the world of magnificent oil deals and impressive, albeit corrupt, corporate maneuvering, the oil industry in particular. Then one could go over to the François Janoux suite and look out from this same hilltop villa, and one would see the world of Adolf Hitler, the world of Carlos the Jackal, the world of international clandestine Nazi finance, and as we're going to see in this broadcast, those worlds are directly connected and are part of the same structure. We're going to be taking a look at material in this broadcast, most of which has been included in previous programs, but I have not grouped together these various elements. Now, again, one could subtitle this program, The Texas Rangers Meet Al-Qaeda and Adolf Hitler. We're going to take a look at a couple of recent articles, and we're going to take a look at one of the elements that unites these seemingly disparate events. San Jose Mercury News of Thursday, August 29th of 2002 has an article by Colm Lynch of the Washington Post, Stateline the United Nations, headlined, Terror Funds Said to Resurge, subtitled Global Crackdown Stalled, UN Says. This article reads in part as follows, and it's a scary one. As we approach the anniversary, the first anniversary of September 11th, and as the world, or at least in the United States, not the world, but the United States has been focused largely on the baseball strike, in fact, there are elements which unite these two seemingly disparate things. The world of terrorism and the world of Al-Qaeda. Again, San Jose Mercury, 829, 2002. A global campaign to block Al-Qaeda's access to money has stalled, enabling the terrorist network to obtain a fresh infusion of tens of millions of dollars and putting it in position to finance future attacks, said a draft UN report. In the months immediately after the September 11th attacks, the United States and other UN members moved to shut down Al-Qaeda's financial network, freezing more than $112 million in assets belonging to suspected members and supporters of the organization. But only $10 million in additional funds has been blocked over the past 8 months, said the 43-page draft report, which was written by a UN panel responsible for monitoring enforcement of an arms, travel, and financial embargo against Al-Qaeda and its associates. Al-Qaeda continues to draw on funds from the personal inheritance of Osama bin Laden, the Saudi-born dissident who heads the network, as well as investments and money diverted or embezzled from charitable organizations, said the draft report. The report of the Monitoring Group on Al-Qaeda, which is expected to be released next week, offers a rare survey of the state of the financial war on terrorism. In the aftermath of attacks in New York and Washington, President Bush announced the freezing of assets of dozens of organizations and individuals linked to al-Qaeda, and U.S. diplomats harnessed the authority of the U.N. Security Council behind the effort. The Council adopted a resolution requiring the United Nations 189 members to seize the assets of individuals placed on a U.N. list of suspected associates of al-Qaeda. Despite this campaign, the report said, al-Qaeda financial backers in North Africa, the Middle East, and Asia manage at least $30 million in investments for the group, with some estimates ranging as high as $300 million. The money reportedly includes investments from Mauritius, Singapore, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Panama, it said. Al-Qaeda is also suspected of having bank accounts under the name of unidentified intermediaries in Dubai, United Arab Emirates, Hong Kong, London, Malaysia, and Vienna, Austria. And private donations to the group, estimated at $16 million a year, are believed to, quote, continue largely unabated, unquote, the report said. Skipping down, and again, this is a UN report. Quote, al-Qaeda is by all accounts fit and well and poised to strike again in its leisure, it continued, again quoting, the prime targets of the organization are likely to be persons and property of the United States of America and its allies in the fight against al-Qaeda, as well as against Israel, unquote. So according to this UN report, the funding sources for al-Qaeda, surprise, surprise, have remained largely out of reach despite the vigorous or at least noisy efforts of the United States, and at least in the case of Treasury Department O'Neill, who I think has done a very good job with regard to the terrorist funding interdiction, although his efforts have been interdicted, and we'll talk about that later. I think O'Neill has done a pretty good job. Nonetheless, it should come as no surprise that the funding of al-Qaeda and its financing is really the key to its existence. The operational level individuals will come and go, but drawing from a largely poor pool of recruits, having a lot of money is in the end a very decisive factor. And when one moves away from the ghoulish images not only of the destruction of September 11th, but of the sort of the Wolfman-like B-grade 50s horror movie figure of Osama bin Laden, sort of like a 1943 Bela Lugosi figure. And when one moves away from the images and when one moves away from the cowboy-like images of George W. Bush giving the people his faux down-home Marlboro Man BS, one comes across some very, very powerful corridors of finance. And two events in the news very much in the last couple of weeks. One, obviously, the approach of the first anniversary of September 11th. And I would note that UN draft report saying that due to the fact that its funding sources are largely untouched, al-Qaeda is fit and well and poised to strike again at its leisure. Not a very good thing to contemplate. But also we have been deluged with news in the United States about the possibility of a baseball strike, and that was averted. But the one was seemingly disconnected to the other, and yet, through the world of powerful finance, or the milieu of powerful finance, there are actually some connections. George W. Bush has had a fair amount of publicity in connection with the baseball strike. He was the former part owner of the Texas Rangers, and as we've looked at in, among other programs, For the Record 368, Hearken Unto Me, George W. Bush's share in the Texas Rangers was capitalized largely from his sale of stock in Hearken Energy. And Hearken Energy is one of the things that unites the world of George W. Bush and the Texas Rangers with the world of Talat Atman, the Clearstream Network, BCCI, Al-Qaeda, Al-Taqwa, and a lot of other things. So again, the view from the bridge will show us François Genoux and Talat Atman, and in the person of those two, we will see, in effect, al-Qaeda meeting the Texas Rangers and Adolf Hitler. Another article that appeared in the news this week, by the way, brief mention of George Bush and the Texas Rangers. In, among other papers, the Financial Times of Friday, August 30th of 2002, Robert Clough writes, clubs offer owners only a sporting chance. And it says, President George W. Bush famously made his fortune by selling his share of the Texas Rangers baseball team. Well, his share was capitalized through the purchase or the sale of stock in Hearken Energy. And this past week, right in the wake of the story about al-Qaeda largely being untouched in a financial sense, An article appeared about the U.S. acting in conjunction with, among other countries, Italy and Luxembourg to interdict some of the funding conduits of al-Qaeda. And a couple of the key names here are those of Bank al-Taqwa, Youssef Nada, and an apparently or allegedly related institution, the Aqida Bank. L.A. Times of Friday, August 30th of 2002 has the following article by Warren Vieth, or Vieth, V-I-E-T-H. It's headlined, U.S. and Italy Act Against Terror Suspects. It's datelined Washington, and it reads in part as follows. The United States and Italy acted in concert Thursday to freeze the assets of 25 individuals and financial entities with alleged ties to the al-Qaeda terrorist group. The joint offensive was the biggest collaborative effort of its kind, U.S. officials said, and came amid growing concern about a perceived lack of progress in cutting off the flow of funds to terrorists, skipping down. The U.S. and Italy issued blocking orders that require commercial banks to search for assets belonging to the individuals and entities and to freeze any they find. The list includes 11 people associated with a Salafist group for call and combat, described by U.S. officials as, quote, a lethal terror group with ties to al-Qaeda. The other 14 are entities owned or controlled by Ahmed Idris Nasreddin and Youssef Nada, both of whom have been accused of bankrolling terrorists. We've dealt with Nada and al-Taqwa in numerous programs, Nada having allegedly worked for the Abwehr under Admiral Canaris on behalf of Nazi Germany in World War II, a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, and allegedly, along with his collaborative elements in the al-Qaeda, or the al-Taqwa, Nada management, Banco del Gotardo milieu, including Ahmed Huber, and the milieu of the aforementioned Banco del Gotardo. Youssef Nada and al-Taqwa were allegedly funding conduits for al-Qaeda. More about these particular raids. The action increases to 234 the number of people and organizations placed on an international roster of alleged terrorist financiers following the September 11th attacks on the U.S. So far, the U.S. and other countries have frozen more than $112 million in assets, Treasury officials said. But most of the actions have been initiated by Washington, and the campaign seems to have been slowed in recent months. A United Nations monitoring panel has written a draft report that says the asset seizures have failed to dry up financing for al-Qaeda, the militant Islamic network accused of orchestrating the September 11th attacks. Quote, al-Qaeda continues to have access to considerable financial and other economic resources, the panel said in the draft report. It characterized the group as alive and well and poised to strike again how, when, and where it chooses, unquote. And one of the reasons for that is the interdiction of funds. More about the recent moves by the U.S., Italy, and Luxembourg against al-Taqwa, Youssef Nada, and company. Treasury officials said Thursday's action was significant because it was the largest asset freezing operation to date involving collaborative efforts by several countries. In addition to the U.S. and Italy, Luxembourg and the Bahamas participated in the effort. Quote, all four of those nations provided financial information, investigative assistance, or key documents or support, which allowed us to make the case necessary for today's designation, unquote, said Jimmy Gurule, G-U-R-U-L-E, Treasury Undersecretary for Enforcement. And skipping down again, the 14 entities are part of the holdings of Nada and Nasreddin, both of whom were already on the list of alleged financiers. U.S. officials said the men have worked together for many years and exercised control over Bank al-Taqwa and Aqida Bank, shell companies that share the same postal address in the Bahamas. Nasreddin is part of the al-Taqwa milieu. Well, one of the reasons why I suspect the al-Qaeda funding sources have remained, the tap has remained open, is not only the fact that this is not just, that al-Qaeda is not a peripheral organization, but in fact, what I have referred to in the past as very significant structural economic relationships harbor within it the infective virus or the infective agent of al-Qaeda terrorism, and it is these structural relationships which have been able to conspiratorial and subversive process to be nurtured. And some of the people involved in both the structural and the conspiratorial processes are there for conspiratorial reasons, but one of the reasons why the funding has not been cut off is because the networking, I think that's a very important word. The networking involved would cut across some very significant structural economic relationships. And we've talked about that in many programs in the past. Now, the view from the bridge. Talat Atman, the world of the Texas Rangers, Harkin Energy, Big Oil, and contemporary high-rolling finance. We're going to review briefly some of the connections between bin Laden, Talat Atman, and George W. Bush, reviewing from the book Forbidden Truth, U.S. Taliban Secret Oil Diplomacy and the Failed Hunt for Bin Laden. That book was co-authored by Jean-Charles Brizal and Guillaume Dasquier. It was published in softcover by Thunder's Mouth Press, Nation Books in New York. Copyright 2002, the ISBN number for the paperback edition 56025-414-9. Reviewing information about Talat Atman and Harkin Energy. Bear in mind that Khalid bin Mahfouz is very much connected to the BCCI milieu, along with Gayit Faron and Abdullah Baksh, whose protege Talat Atman is. This goes to the BCCI network and to, among other things, the Clearstream network, about which we will have more to say later. Reviewing from Forbidden Truth about Talat Atman, his relationship to George Bush, the BCCI milieu, and the milieu of al-Qaeda. In 1987, an obscure Saudi financier named Abdullah Taha Baksh, B-A-K-H-S-H, invested in Harkin, a Texas oil company of which George W. Bush was a director from 1986 to 1993. The deal consisted of recapitalizing the company, which was going through difficult times. This Saudi investor is none other than the partner of Khalid bin Mahfouz and Gayit Faron, by the way, parenthetically, both with strong connections to the BCCI milieu and also independently to George Bush. Continuing, and so Taha Baksh became an 11.5% shareholder in Harkin Energy Corporation. His representative within Harkin Energy is not unknown either. Talat Atman is a member alongside Frank Carlucci of one of America's most prestigious think tanks, the Middle East Policy Council, as well as being a leading Arab-American supporter of the Republican Party. And still more about Atman later on in Forbidden Truth. Between 1976 and 1982, Abdullah Taha Baksh, whose protege Atman was, an investor in Harkin Energy, was a representative for the bin Laden family in the United States. He also represents Khalid bin Mahfouz's financial interests in the Middle East. So again, Abdullah Taha Baksh, whose protege Atman is, was the representative for the bin Laden family as a whole's business interests in the United States. And it was from the four separate sales of stock of Harkin Energy that George Bush made the money to buy his share in the Texas Rangers. Reviewing now from For the Record program number 368, Hearken Unto Me, Talat Atman was also a member of the audit board in the Aloha Petroleum deal, basically a crooked insider deal, which pumped up the value of Harkin's stock, and that inflated value helped to give George Bush the capital. And again, one of the key names here, Talat Atman, along with Harkin Energy. Reviewing from 368. This is from Bush OK's Deal Like Enron's by Warren Veith, the same author who wrote the article we just read a couple of minutes ago. This is from the LA Times of July 12th of 2002, page A1 and A13. In early 1989, George W. Bush and his fellow board members at Harkin Energy Corporation were presiding over a company that was headed south in a hurry. The Dallas-based oil firm had lost millions of dollars placing bad bets on commodity futures. Debt was piling up, red ink was beginning to flow. Harkin's executives came up with a novel plan to ease that pain. They would sell a small chain of Hawaiian gas stations called Aloha Petroleum to a group of investors that included Harkin's chairman and one of its directors. The buyers would pay $1 million up front, but the accountants would record an immediate $7 million profit, enough to erase most of Harkin's losses for the year. They made a point of seeking the approval of directors who were not participants in the investor group. Bush, a member of the board's audit committee, signed off on the deal according to Harkin documents. So did the company's outside auditor, Arthur Anderson and Company. That, by the way, was also the auditor for Enron. Continuing, but the government challenged and ultimately overturned the accounting method used by Harkin to post a gain on the sale. Aloha was sold a second time, and the new buyer extracted big concessions from the company. The initial profit recorded on the sale morphed into a big loss. In the midst of all the maneuvering, Bush sold most of his Harkin stock in June of 1990. Based on a review of publicly released Securities and Exchange Commission filings, meeting minutes, memos, and correspondence from that period, there is no evidence that Bush or any of the other directors raised objections or expressed concern about the Aloha deal. Experts on corporate governance say that as an independent director and one of only three members of the audit committee, Bush was in a position to exercise an important oversight role but apparently failed to do so. An audit committee's primary responsibility is to ensure that the company's outside auditors conduct a thorough examination of the financial records without interference from officers and employees, unquote. Still quoting, the Aloha sale was so similar to what Enron Corporation did to hide its losses that Harkin could have served as a model for the now disgraced company, one accounting expert said. By the way, Enron's name has also cropped up in connection with the Taliban oil pipeline deal in Afghanistan. So there may very well be an Enron connection to Al-Qaeda as well. We looked at that in For the Record number 362. Continuing. The people at Enron could have gone to school on this thing, said Alfred King, former managing director of the Institute of Management Accountants, vice chairman of Milwaukee-based Valuation Research Corporation, and former advisor to the Financial Accounting Standards Board, unquote. They sold to themselves and recorded a profit, King said. That's exactly what Enron did on a number of those off-balance sheet transactions. On this one transaction, at least, it's almost identical. Still, accounting experts, security law specialists, and political analysts say there is enough similarity between events at Harkin and Enron to keep Bush on the defensive about his own actions a decade ago and undermine his credibility as a corporate reformer. Indeed, Bush would not have been allowed to serve on Harkin's audit committee if the reform proposals he allowed this week had been in effect then. The president says audit panel membership should be limited to outside directors. Besides sitting on Harkin's board, Bush had a consulting contract with the company. According to accounting experts, that qualifies him as a corporate insider. Hiding losses in partnerships, playing games with accounting, not reporting forthrightly transactions as a potential inside trader, it's all eerily reminiscent of Enron, said Charles Lewis, executive director of the Center of Public Integrity, a Washington research group. This is not a corporate executive who laid awake at night worrying about complying with federal laws, from all appearances, said Lewis, who has been critical of the Bush administration. Another transaction at Harkin would have violated Bush reform's proposals as well. On Thursday, the White House confirmed that Harkin made two loans to Bush while he served on the board of directors, a practice that Bush now wants publicly held companies to prohibit. The loans, totaling $180,375, were made in 1986 and 1988 at a below-market interest rate to enable Bush to purchase Harkin stock under an incentive plan for board members. Suspicions about the Aloha Petroleum deal have been fueled by the fact that most of the principals refused to talk. Of the seven Harkin directors who served on the board with Bush, five declined to discuss the deal or did not return calls seeking comment. Executives at Aloha, now a privately held company, also declined to comment. So did past and present officials at Harkin, Arthur Anderson, and the SEC. Skipping down. Former director Talat M. Otman, who chaired the three-member audit committee, said he did not recall the details of the Aloha sale or the company's reasons for arranging it. Quote, I'm not sure that our motivation was to create instant profits, said Otman, a Palestinian who represented Saudi investors who owned 13% of Harkin's stock. It was a normal part of the business to be buying and selling. So again, Talat Otman, one of the key directors in the Aloha deal. And that is, in one sense, how the Texas Rangers meet Al-Qaeda. I would note, incidentally, that the Houston Astros played in Enron Field. Enron Field has now been renamed, but the world of Texas Major League Baseball has some interesting connections to the energy industry and to Al-Qaeda and to Islamofascism and beyond that. In the background, international fascism and the underground Reich. So remember the name Talat Otman, because we're going to be taking a look at his efforts directly interceding on behalf of people whose assets had been seized by the Treasury Department on March 20th. And we talked about that in For the Record 353, 356, and 357. More about Talat Atman. Again, an individual, if you're looking out from the Al-Qaeda villa, and if you rent the Talat Atman suite, you will see the world of the Texas Rangers, the energy business, the oil business. But then if you begin looking farther into the distance, you come to BCCI, the Clearstream Network, and through Talat Atman, the world of September 11th. Reviewing an element that we looked at in For the Record number 356, this is an article titled, O'Neill Met Muslim Activists Tied to Charities. It was authored by Glenn Simpson with Roger Turo. It was published in the Wall Street Journal of April 18, 2002 on page A4. Among the Muslim leaders attending the meeting with O'Neill was Talat Atman, a longtime associate and supporter of President Bush's family, who gave a benediction at the Republican National Convention in Philadelphia in August of 2000. Talking about some of the links between organizations that whose assets were confiscated on the March 20th raid by the Treasury Department, in turn instigated by a lawsuit filed by John Loftus, we read as follows, and in For the Record 356, we talked about Jamal Barzinji, his connections to the World Assembly of Muslim Youth, its alleged connections to Al-Qaeda, and Barzinji's connections to people like Samir Salah and Youssef Nada. Speaking of Talat Atman, again the co-director with Bush of Harkin Energy, but he also serves with Barzinji on the board of Amana Mutual Funds Trust, an investment firm founded by M. Yaqub Mirza, the Northern Virginia businessman who set up most of the entities targeted by the Treasury and whose tax records were sought in the raid. And this also, the Talat Atman connection, also marks the intersection with the Republican Party's ethnic outreach organization. The case also highlights conflicts between the Bush administration's domestic political goals and its war on terror. GOP officials began courting the U.S. Muslim community intensely in the late 1990s, seeking to add that ethnic bloc to the party's political base. Skipping down still further, the meeting was a highly unusual one. Bruce Sigaris, an asset forfeiture lawyer who represents clients in similar cases, said a meeting between Treasury officials and anyone who might be associated with an entity under investigation is very unusual. It's virtually impossible to arrange such a meeting, especially with the Treasury Secretary, Mr. Zagara said. It's very difficult to even get phone calls returned. And about the involvement of Atman with this milieu, two nonprofits affiliated with Mr. Mirza and named in the search warrant, the SAR Foundation Incorporated and the Heritage Education Trust Incorporated, held large blocks of shares in Amana's mutual funds in 1997, according to SEC records. The SEC documents and other records detailing connections between Mr. Atman and the Islamic Institute, on the board of which Mr. Atman serves, and the raided groups were compiled by the National Security News Service, a Washington-based nonprofit research corporation. We're going to continue with analysis of Talat Atman, his intercedence with Treasury Department on behalf of the people targeted on the March 20th raids, and his links to the milieu of Al-Qaeda and Al-Taqwa in the second side of the program. The For the Record section of the Spitfire website will have a detailed annotated article-length description in its For the Record section for the Record 376 within a week of the broadcast. The For the Record section of the Spitfire website is equipped with real audio and also has links to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM, wfmu.org/Dave Emory, one word, DaveEmory, has the more recent For the Record program streaming. There are older For the Record programs available for download only on Real Audio at a longer URL connected to not only the wfmu.org/Dave Emory website, but to the Spitfire website as well. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 376, A View from the Bridge, being recorded on September 1st of 2002. My name's Dave Emory. Thanks for listening.